KTWH, you're listening to What's Happening, and Jay Belcastro is with me in the studio. Thank you so much, Jay, for your continued attendance here at KTWH.
Oh, it's always a pleasure. Enjoy the time.
Yeah, well, it's super to have you here, and obviously a big time of year for Lake Superior School District. I hate to ask you this. It's been a nice summer. It's probably been a short summer, and here we are back and ready to go. How are you doing with that?
Who could have ever thought that where we're at this year could be as challenging, if not more, than last year? But we've navigated some things. We've thought a lot. We've organized what we believe is a strong plan. You know, a lot of cooperation with our local public health experts, and we're ready to go. You know, we're certainly monitoring data, and we're hopeful that things continue to slow. Unfortunately, that's not the case right now. But as far as the school goes, you know, our district folks over the summer, custodians, secretaries, the buildings are prepped. They're ready to roll. Everybody would like another week or two to just, you know, put the final touches on. But yep. You know what? We're educators, and we're so excited to see our kids back. And that, you know, as I said to the office folks yesterday, bring them back. We need them now. It's you can only prep for so long.
Right. I like that. You can only prep for so long. Yeah. Well, so there are many angles of this. Let's first just talk about the angle of COVID. And obviously, this isn't a done deal yet, as maybe we'd hoped at the end of the year last year. Do you have any sense of, I mean, I've talked to Greg Ruberg on this station about we do have rising numbers. We also have a high vaccine rate in our county. And we learned that there was a process. Tell us about the process whereby you came to decide, you know, what would be the protocol around masks? What would be your other, you know, things around washing or numbers or spacing, stuff like that?
Well, certainly we were very, very excited to see our numbers decline in the spring and early summer. And when we were able to then follow guidelines and take masks off, it felt normal and felt good.
Yep.
And then, of course, as things started to wind back up, we certainly saw some unfortunate things happening in the southern states with school returns. They oftentimes start before the northern states. And immediately, you know, some confusion in regards to, well, wait a minute, we thought numbers were going down. Now they're going up. But the process that, you know, like it, dislike it, agree, disagree, and we know there are people on both sides that have very good reasons why.
Yeah.
But certainly the fact of the matter is that, you know, we really need to be thoughtful of what we do for our kids to make sure that we're doing everything we can to get them back into as what I consider to be as the new normal or the new traditional. And so through this process, we've looked at local data heavily. So if you were in agreement with the government, if you will, mandating us wearing masks, I guess the good part was we just had to do it. And we have to do it on our public transportation and our district transportation. That's not a district decision. We have to mask.
Okay.
Now, when we talk about inside the buildings, you know, now we're looking at the freedoms that districts have because it's local control. We went right to the local source. And so that puts us in cooperation with and communications with Lake County Public Health. We started our conversations over a month ago. Greg was part of those conversations, looking at where things were at, looking at trends, understanding local data, and building a plan cooperatively that we think does provide transition. So if numbers continue to go in the wrong direction, we'll put in additional mitigation strategies to try to counter that. But if numbers stay where they're at, we do provide, you know, the freedom for the families to make decisions based on what they believe is important for their kids. The part that I've directed the principals to do is to really keep a strong eye out and an ear for in listening to staff in regards to if a student does choose to mask, that's their right. And I certainly don't want any student to feel like, you know, they're out of place because they choose to mask, or, you know, I know how kids can be.
Right.
And so that is...
Well, and adults, I would mention.
Well, sure. And we really want to make sure that we're welcoming, and that decision is their decision. And so from that perspective, it's difficult. I think it's going to be difficult, but doable. The part that we really looked at with a mask mandate, that would be then, okay, so how do you manage the mandate? Because we know this is politicized now. We know that it's gone beyond, for some people, it's gone beyond the health piece. But, you know, thinking of a student that's in second grade that, you know, it's the family belief that they should not mask. And now we have a mandate and we're having to send a kid home. It just, none of that felt right.
Yeah.
But also what doesn't feel right is people getting sick. And so utilizing that information, talking with our local health professionals, really strategizing a plan. And we met for an hour yesterday, which I thought would have been about a 10-minute meeting because of all the time we spent prior to building out our plan that we released yesterday. But that's how detailed and professional the folks that worked on it. And I can't say enough about our school nurses, our administration, you know, working through this. I'll tell you, this is tough.
Yeah.
This is because you know on either side, people are not going to be happy with the decision. And that's part of me growing into this position. And that's a little different. But the reality is, you know, we really want to have some strong mitigation strategies and the ability to transition. And the district has reserved all rights to transition when they believe fit. We will be monitoring data twice a week. And so it's what's great is we can get local information quickly. And we've got the commitment from our public health to provide that information.
Right. And at the heart of it, you know, you're just a finite group of humans trying to do your best.
Yes.
And so there's got to be a certain level of trust there. I know you asked for parent input and you got parent input.
Yeah.
Do you have a sense that people are ready to live with this generally?
Well, you know, I've certainly have respected and thank you to everybody. And I do mean that have reached out to me to share their concerns. I had a great conversation yesterday with a staff member in regards to what they believe, and you know, it's great to have conversation. Again, that doesn't always lean. Conversation is great when you can leave the conversation agreeing to disagree.
Right.
Conversation isn't great when if you don't do what I tell you to do, you're wrong. And so, from that perspective, I can't guarantee our plan will lead to success. But nor if we were to shut everything down, that doesn't necessarily lead to success as well. So we're going to modify.
Right.
We're going to continue to keep our eyes and ears, focused on where we're at and make changes as need be.
There's no risk situation here. There's just a real world out there. And
that's right.
So that's just really good to hear from the top, as it were. Thank you, Jay. Now let's talk a little bit about another aspect of this. There's been a lot of in the news about learning loss and where's our starting point now, and how are we going to work to make that up when we need to?
That's a huge concern, and certainly as people are familiar with the ESSER dollars or the federal government dollars to support education, out of some of the ESSER law, there is percentages, in this case 10% of the ESSER dollars that are one-time dollars that districts have received are dedicated to learning loss. So our elementaries are monitoring data. We'll be doing what's considered formative testing, so ensuring we understand where kids are at presently in comparison to where they should be. And we've now hired additional staff to assist in getting kids back to grade level and better. And that's the goal. So we're really excited to have some interventionists. This is new to us. This is right now hired as a year in position. But we are looking at, you know, ensuring we can get kids at grade level. And I don't know if you or the listeners know this, but it's pretty crazy to think that they build prisons based on third grade reading levels.
Yeah.
And so what we know is that it's our job to get in and do things right. And we've put additional staff in place to make sure at that primary grades that we're doing everything we can to bring back. And last year, some kids flourished and some kids did not. And so this will be some additional support for the kids that did struggle through the multitudes of in school blended and then distance learning. So we're happy with it, and we're excited to bring these people on board.
Okay. Now, I'm trying to think what it actually looks like on the ground. Is it, you know, teachers alerting the special staff to, I think, so-and-so may need a little extra support right now, and then they get a little extra attention? And I mean, is that the kind of thing it is? It's one-on-one?
Yes. Education has become, like any other industry, based a lot on data. And so the data that we collect on our kids, we use what's called the STAR tests. And that provides us the ability to test often. And that data then is charted. And so we can start to see when students are gaining where they should be, moving, you know, positive gains. And so the programs that we're implementing, ATSIS being a big one that's been in the district for a number of years now, probably the most successful intervention program that we have, really tracks students based on this data. And so it isn't, certainly if a teacher came and said, you know, I think this particular student is struggling, we'll do that. But we're going to first and foremost look at the data. And the good thing is we collect it often. And so it's not a, like the MCAs, as everybody knows, it's a snapshot. And that's, are we teaching to the standards? Mm-hmm. But when we use this primary data and we use it often, we can start to see trends. And then we intervene when the trends aren't going in the right direction.
Mm. And as a parent, I would always add the caveat, or I hope that the testing doesn't take up so much time away from the teaching. That's always the concern, isn't it?
And the beauty of this is the STAR tests are quick, and they're built to be that way. They're quick, concise, but they give us that critical information so we can intervene. MCAs once a year, I mean, for us to make some major changes off of that, it would be so long to implement something where this right. This information provides us a chance to get kids in and get them the supports in which they need.
Mm. Wonderful. All right. Let's talk a little bit more big vision. Jay, there's a referendum coming in November. There's a school being paid off. And what do you want to tell us about the big picture?
Well, we're in an amazing opportunity for our communities. And this opportunity is rare in the fact that we have Two Harbors High School that was built in 2005, considered our new school, but you think 2005 was quite
right,
a while ago.
Right.
Testament to the fact of our students and our staff and our custodians that have really done a great job with that resource to keep it new. But that building is going to get paid off. And what it does now allow us to do is to go back to the voters in what's considered a levy neutral push, meaning the current amount that they're paying on their educational portion of their taxes, if we can get this thing through in November, provides just under $45 million to make so much needed improvements to the Minnehaha and to Kelly. And so that's really a big piece. Lots of information coming. I'll be out and about promoting. I say I'm going to go on tour. I'm excited to talk to anybody that wants to know about our facilities. This is an opportunity for our communities to really get our buildings up to the 21st century experiences that our kids deserve. It's amazing. And I walk through our schools, and when I walked through, we hired a firm, a project management firm, ICS, who has been amazing to work with. They had helped Hermantown with their schools. They've helped Rock Ridge, number of local and regional school districts to kind of frame things up. We've hired a new architecture firm in Wold out of St. Paul, and we were a little bit worried about, St. Paul is a long ways away from Silver Bay and Two Harbors.
Yeah.
But every time that we've requested them to be here, they are, and sometimes they show up even when we didn't expect them to be here, but have really built plans now that really address the needs of our 21st century learners. And it's amazing when we did our tours, you know, we're walking in and our communities do the best with what they have. There's no doubt. You know, you walk in, there's old furniture. It works, you know, and we're not here to just have great furniture.
Yeah.
But we're here to have great, great facilities that really provide our kids and our community the strength to stand behind our schools. And right now, that's it. And we certainly know, you know, when people decide in a new community and they have kids, the
right.
first thing they want to look at is tell us about your school system.
Absolutely. And they want to walk through it themselves.
Absolutely.
And see what the feel is when they walk through.
And I strongly encourage everybody to walk through. I think what you're bringing up is critical. Walk through the facilities. Give me a call. We'll do it together. But to really get a chance to see what we're looking to do, what we need to accomplish, and with a successful vote in November, what we're really doing is setting up the communities strongly with good facilities for the next 20 years. What a legacy!
And I
look at that as what a legacy to leave. And it's time. It really is time. When we walk into the facilities and we see the great things our teachers are doing, I'm so excited for what we can provide our communities with the support of the taxpayer.
And just to be clear, you mentioned at the beginning, but this is an opportunity that comes really to upgrade and prepare for the future of our schools without a tax increase.
Correct.
That's the amazing part about what's available for this year.
Right.
Yep.
So it's very unusual. You know, usually if this isn't what we do know is there's critical need. That there's no question about that. I couldn't sit here in good graces and come back and say, oh, we need to put $20 million into Two Harbors High School. We've done something wrong if that was the request.
Yeah.
But when we're looking at the Minnehaha, you know, that was built on an old foundation, we've got water intrusion, we've got water pouring into an electrical room.
Yeah.
You know, Kelly, it doesn't have ADA compliance. These are things that we need to absolutely address as a communities to build stronger communities. And people want to come here. We had a lot of applicants for our assistant principal. I know we'll talk about that in a second. And the question of why Two Harbors? Why not?
Yeah.
Why not Silver Bay?
Right.
And so let's get the facilities up and get them going and continue to build this communities into being, you know, even stronger than they are now.
Fantastic. We're running out of time, but let's quickly talk about the new hire. We have a new assistant principal.
We are very, very excited. We can't release the name yet because it's got to go in front of the board Tuesday. But when it is released, there's going to be a common name coming back to the area. And so we're very, very excited. We lost Miss Cook, Jessica Cook. She took a position in Duluth. So we're certainly wishing her all the best. And we ended up with 8 really strong candidates.
Wow.
And it's, you know, why Two Harbors High School? Well, it's got a great reputation, you know, so it was really neat to hear that. But when the dust settled, we really narrowed it down to 3 candidates and the team decided on one. And it's always wonderful to make the call and say, congratulations, you were offered the position. And this individual is just ecstatic that he'll be able to come back. So it is a male. We'll give you we'll leak that out. But it's we're really excited.
Wonderful. Well, now we'll all be on pins and needles waiting to hear who we're getting. All right. Well, thank you so much, Jay. This has been super, and I'm sure we'll have you back once things are up and rolling. And thanks again for all that you've been doing.
All right. Thank you so much.
That was Jay Belcastro, superintendent of the Lake Superior School District. In just a moment, we will have Kenny Blumenfeld on here with some weather tidbits. Right, you're listening to What's Happening, and Kenny Blumenfeld is with me by phone. Kenny is a climatologist from the Minnesota DNR. Thank you so much for coming on again this week, Kenny.
Yeah, good to be on.
Good, yeah. So I feel like there's a lot to talk about. Of course, everyone's dying to know the unknowable. Is it going to rain, and how much? We've had just spittings thus far, you know, I think less than a tenth of an inch. I know you got lots of rain down there, and we've had 2 mornings when we woke up with, you know, it smelled like a campfire in the house. We belatedly ran around and shut windows. So definitely fire is big story up here, and also the wind and the rain. So you got your hands full and for 10 minutes.
Yeah. So this is a really cruel fate of the last week has been that it's rained at least a half an inch over about 85% of Minnesota from Duluth up to International Falls. If you just draw that line and look at everything south and west of that line, has gotten at least a half an inch of rain. There might be one little break in western Coochitching County, but that's it. It's the vast majority of the state. To to the east and north of that line, that's you.
Yeah.
And the precipitation has been pretty paltry. You know, some scattered areas of Cook County got, you know, close to a half inch or maybe even over a half inch over the week. That's still not enough.
Right.
That's still not even normal. But most of Lake County came in between a tenth of an inch and a quarter of an inch. That's just not enough. Down in the on the southern Minnesota border with Iowa, the week-long precipitation totals are approaching 8-9 inches.
Whoa.
The southern parts of the southern Twin Cities area has had between 4 and 7 inches of rain over the last week. Even you know the Minneapolis-St. Paul area specifically is clocking in and just about 4 inches on the week. So pretty good precipitation down here, but you have dry conditions in northeast Minnesota, and of course there have been not just the Greenwood fire, but other fire incidents going on also.
Is there a way in which the fires are actually sucking moisture out of the air so that there's a reason that northeast Minnesota has missed out on this rain, or is it just bad luck?
Yeah, not quite to that scale of fire yet. I mean, this fire is big enough that it is making its own weather. I don't know if you saw the video of the McDougal Lake surveillance.
Yeah.
But the fire is basically, you know, it's this big heat engine, and what will happen then is the heat near the middle of the fire will rise. It can actually form the same type of updrafts that you find in thunderstorms and even downdrafts. And of course, sometimes there can be convective clouds like thunderclouds with lightning in them. And there have been some reports of that, the pyrocumulonimbus cloud that's getting famous this year. And then what happens is those downdrafts produce wind. And that fans the flames and pushes them further into dry areas that hadn't been burning yet. In terms of sucking the moisture out of the air, I mean, this is pretty small compared to the air mass that's moving in. And so, you know, if there's a very light area of precipitation moving in, then the fire area plausibly could have a bigger effect on the local conditions, you know, and maybe preventing a small shower from doing much. But that small shower wasn't going to produce more than, you know, a barely measurable precipitation. Once the big system gets going, you know, I think the fire won't be suppressing large, you know, regional scale weather systems or the precipitation from it. So far, it's been bad luck.
Yep. Okay.
Keeping you dry there.
Okay.
Yeah.
And it still seems like we got a pretty high percentage of chance of rain at some point in the next 2 days, especially Saturday night.
Yeah. So, you know, there's still some uncertainty. I think your first shot of, reasonable precipitation could come later today. There's been this big disturbance that's been parked over kind of southern Minnesota for the last day or so, and that's why it's been so active down in southern parts of the state. A piece of that disturbance is going to lift northward today. There's going to be light to moderate rain kind of moving from southwest to northeast. I can't guarantee that it'll be enough to put out the fire, but you know, it does look like just from that, if you kind of believe some of the short-term models, there would be scattered areas getting a quarter to a half an inch from that. I don't think it'll be a widespread half inch rain, but that's just this afternoon and evening.
Mm-hmm.
And then as we get into deeper into the weekend, as you mentioned, then the chances actually do improve where you could I wouldn't be surprised. The hydrometeorological, or what we used to call the Hydrometeorological Prediction Center at NOAA, they're now called the Weather Prediction Center.
Mm-hmm.
They actually see today in your region, you know, up to a quarter, maybe a half an inch. And then in the period between Saturday morning and Sunday morning, a half an inch to an inch of precipitation. And then, you know, additional chances later next week.
Yeah.
So, if it all works out, you know, everyone and your listenership gets about 3/4 of an inch of rain over the weekend or more.
Yeah. Yep.
So
and
that
then,
would be
and
nice.
It just remains to be seen how much that would do, but it would certainly do something for those fires.
Yeah, I don't. That's one thing that I'm not skilled at doing, knowing because
yeah.
fires behave so differently.
Yeah.
And, you know, this fire has moved. If you look at the satellite information, which is one of the best ways to get information about the fire, because, you know, nobody's in the middle of it.
Right.
But, you know, you can imagine it eats through the fuels, a lot of the trees, it burns them, it takes what it can. And then the fire is often kind of concentrated in these fronts out around the periphery, wherever the wind has blown it. So you see these new satellite fire detections, meaning the satellite detects pockets of heat that are consistent with fire, and they're out around the perimeter. It's kind of a different shape to the fire from a few days ago when it was more of a solid mass, but now it's burned through some of that fuel and
yeah.
it's probably not producing much in the way of new fires in the middle of it. So I don't know exactly because of the mechanics of it. It's been very hard to contain. I don't know how much water it would take. But in general, an inch of rain is pretty generous. You know, if you dump an inch of rain over an area, it's probably going to be coming down pretty good for, you know, either at a really high rate for, you know, a half an hour to an hour, or, which is what it seems more likely this weekend, would be, you know, kind of multiple waves of moderate rain and then a couple waves, maybe one or two, of really heavy rain lasting, you know, 45 minutes to an hour each.
Yeah.
And that's where some of the chances for precipitation, for heavier precipitation, come in. So I don't know if that would be enough to put out the fire, but I bet you it won't hurt it.
Yeah.
It won't hurt, you know, I bet you it won't hurt the chances of fighting it.
Yeah.
What would be, and you know, there's always a chance for being disappointed by these things.
Right.
But I guess if it's any consolation or makes you feel any better, the area around the fire is not on the edge of the precipitation forecast where it looks really iffy.
Yeah,
kind of close to the middle of it. If you look at that period from tomorrow, that would be Saturday morning through Sunday morning, it's kind of right in the middle. So that's a good position to be in. Hopefully you get those thunderstorms and they don't produce any new lightning fires, or if they do, the rain quickly puts them out, and then hopefully we get more precipitation next
week. Yeah, wonderful. All right, well, now very briefly, Kenny, can you give us you said earlier in this week that, you know, this is not likely going to end our drought, but has it put a significant dent in it in parts elsewhere in the state?
Oh, I think so. I mean, we'll see what happens with the drought monitor next week, but I mean, some things have come back to life. Grass started growing in the Twin Cities again. It greened up. People's grass went from, you know, being dormant. Some of the leaves greened up again.
Huh.
And I think, you know, the Minnehaha Creek, the waterfall in Minneapolis, this 59-foot waterfall, was empty
yeah.
last Saturday, and it's flowing again.
Okay.
So, yeah, I think that in some areas, I would expect, I can't predict this, but I would expect some improvements in the drought categories. It's not going to end the drought. We're going to take months and months to get out of this because of all of the lags in the system. And right now, unfortunately, northeast Minnesota is bringing up the rear. It's kind of, we saw that it expanded. The whole Arrowhead is now in extreme drought. And you know, this past week has been least generous to your region. So we hope to get some additional precipitation, but I think there's going to be a long battle ahead to get out of this drought.
Okay. Thank you so much, Kenny. That was an awesome check-in, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Very good. Always nice talking to you, Katya. Have a good weekend.
You too. Bye-bye. That was Kenny Blumenfeld. He is senior climatologist at the Minnesota DNR, and that ends What's Happening for this morning. Thanks for listening to KTWH.